Sarah is the CEO of the Greater Tremendous City United Way. She's agreed to join us today to tell us a little bit more about herself. So with that, Sarah?
Great. Do you want that, me...
That's a terrible.
Where would you like me to sit?
So yes, nice. That would be just fine if you can sit by the microphone.
Right, this one?
So I think they're both on wherever
both
you're comfortable.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, it's on.
That's on. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sarah. I'm Nancy Black. I'm chair of the committee, and we're so glad that you're taking this time to meet with us. We have about 35 minutes, and there are 7 questions we're going to ask you, and then people will like to ask other questions, and I'm sure you have questions for us. So if you will start with an opening statement, and then you'll have 2 to 3 minutes at the end to make a closing statement.
Sure.
Okay? Great.
Well, committee, thank you for this honor of bringing my name forward for consideration for your committee, for the governor, to choose the important trustees for the MNSCU system. I come to you with several passions that I want to highlight that are so important for this role. The first is a passion for education. As you've seen in my background, I've had the privilege of having an outstanding education and am a true believer that education makes the difference in each individual's life. And clearly the work I was able to be involved in at the Minnesota Children's Museum, which is really a place of early learning, is particularly important to me because I was really able to help young children and their families as well as their schools engage in high-quality learning at a very young age and hopefully create engaged learners and engaged citizens going forward into their school and adult life. I also come to you as a passionate Minnesotan and a passionate believer in the American dream. St. Paul is my home, not too far away from here. I spent a lot of time as a child in the downtown St. Paul Library and have a great love for not only the city of St. Paul, but the Twin Cities and the state. And I also believe that education is vital to the American dream of stability, doing well by our communities, doing well by our families, and education is the key to that. And finally, I want to bring forward the fact that I have a great personal passion for those in need, which really led to my role at Greater Twin Cities United Way. At the Children's Museum, there was a wonderful access program. There was a program really reaching out and making sure that many people can come to the museum if they couldn't afford that. But that was not the core of the work. At United Way, the core of the work is serving people living at 200% of poverty or below, really helping strengthen the safety net for them, and then most importantly, putting them on a path out of poverty. So the final comment I want to make is that this opportunity to be a part of the MNSCU system is really directly linked to my work at Greater Twin Cities United Way, our work serving those in the greatest need in our state, our belief that education and job training are the two keys to a pathway out of poverty, and that among the 300,000 students and mid-career people who are part of the MNSCU system, many, many of them will achieve a stronger, better life because of the role MNSCU plays for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The question that we have is, please describe your understanding of the role of a trustee and explain why you consider yourself to be a good candidate for this role.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have a strong view of what a board should do, having served both on multiple boards as well as now having the privilege, occasional question mark, of having 57 bosses as on the United Way board. So I feel that a board, first of all, there needs to be a very clear line between what a board and trustees do and what staff does. And the cleaner and clearer that is, the better. The board's role is to be the strategic and fiduciary oversight for the organization on which it serves, and not to dip down into the operating decisions of the organization. And it's beholden on Chancellor Rosenstone and his senior staff to bring forward financial documents and strategic documents that depict the system as a system in its totality. It's a very complex system. It's a big system. So I would need to understand that. I would need to ask tough questions on the financial and fundraising side of things. And on the strategic side, really do a couple of things. I think, one, really represent the many, many stakeholders of the MinSCU system. Really learn and understand and think in a far-reaching sense about the role of MinSCU in the state of Minnesota and the role of a community and state education system in the well-being of the state. And so, again, strategic fiduciary oversight, asking the big questions, and finally, from a governance standpoint, ensuring transparency and clarity in everything that we do.
Thank you very much. Representative Dittmers.
What do you see as the key issues on the horizon for higher education in Minnesota and for the Minnesota State College and University System in particular?
So the conditions for higher ed and for MinSCU in the state.
Right. I
think never has the MinSCU system been more important, and never has it been more under pressure from a financial standpoint. The structural budget deficit here in the state is significant and it hasn't been solved for a decade. At some point, we'll get closer to a solution, and it is likely that the cuts and pressure on the state funding for the MinSCU system, as well as for the University of Minnesota, will remain in place and could become greater. That's something I think we want to push against, but I also think the system has to be realistic about what the future is in the macro context of the state economy. I'm very much a realist when I look at issues. So how can the MinSCU system balance its budget and educate its students in the most effective way possible really need to be the questions that we charge the system with solving, without complaining or looking backwards saying, I wish we still had more funding from the state. And I think this is going to take innovation. It's going to take change. It's going to take really understanding what employers want from young people and mid-career people coming out of the system, as well as looking inside the system for efficiencies and finding ways to continue to improve quality of education, improve student graduation rates, while holding and potentially cutting costs, which would enable the system to hold tuition.
Thank you.
Could you describe your understanding of diversity and your experience working with diverse populations?
Diversity is so vital and sometimes so hard to talk about in a way that is that an organization can get its hands around and really understand. And I feel very privileged, as you know, to have worked at General Mills, which has really one of the leading company diversity programs in the country, and I think, my opinion. And the reason I think it's so strong is that it's comprehensive and it's strategic. It looks at who's being hired. It looks at the customers. It looks at the supply chain. It takes on new ventures when it needs to, whether it's finding new ways to recruit minority candidates, adding competencies in how to market to certain ethnic groups, building supply chains in new and different ways to diversify supply chains. And I could go on and on. I've never worked in that area, but I've studied it. And I think that approach of having a systematic, comprehensive diversity and inclusion plan is the key to an institutional commitment to this very important topic. And I have created that plan both in my role as president of Minnesota Children's Museum and now at the United Way. Both organizations had this commitment, had many of the right pieces in place. It was not put on paper, and it was not under board oversight, which I think are two essential components. So I have led diversity and inclusion work from a strategic planning point of view to the implementation point of view. There are many components to that work which we don't have time to really talk about. But again, I think the headline for me is it's vitally important. It's essential for the MNSCU system because of the student population and the demographic trends that are here in the state to be culturally competent and to really be inclusive in our curriculum, in our teaching practices, in our recruiting practices, in how we're placing our students, how we're equipping our faculty to be effective. And those are the types of components I would look for in a system-wide diversity and inclusion plan. And I'm sorry, I don't know at this point if that exists, but that would be one of the first things I would want to look at and assess.
In selecting Rosenstone as the chancellor of MNSCU, it was a rather unusual selection in that they went through the administration of the University of Minnesota to pick their president. And this signals to many that there may be more cooperation in dividing up the task of educating citizens of Minnesota. Would you comment on how you view the differing roles of these two enormous institutions and how they can work more productively for everyone's benefit?
Thank you. I also have the privilege of being part of the Itasca group in my role as CEO at United Way. And many of you know that the Itasca group has taken on this topic of higher education in the state of Minnesota. The group is led by Greg Page, and it's really a fascinating conversation that is going on. And separately, I've had the privilege of getting to know both President Kaler and Chancellor Rosenstone in their first year. And every signal from every corner of leadership is around more collaboration and figuring out what that collaboration should be, and making sure that these systems are equally accountable, if you will, for the well-being of the students coming in and graduating and their fit into the needs of the state economy, very broadly defined. And so I think the right questions are being asked. I can't answer specifically what I think will come of this work, but I think it's vitally important. There could be a lot of different outcomes that the state leaders, including the private college system, really think about in terms of how education is delivered, where some of these specialty programs are delivered, and making sure that the students are getting the education they need in the right locations, which doesn't mean everything has to be offered everywhere. That would be sort of my going in supposition.
Yeah.
I think this next question kind of dovetails with that. Describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical community colleges and state universities.
You know, it is a really unique challenge, and because I'm coming to this opportunity as a community leader, it's one I wouldn't really be able to have an expert opinion on. But my point of view coming in is that the students, as well as the employers in the state, need a wide range of future employees. And we need people with welding, training in welding. That's kind of the joke right now in the business community from all the CEOs. There's a big shortage of welders, and they're all going to retire and become welders. I think I'm a little too scared to take that on, but the guys all think that sounds like fun. And you know, so we need welders, we need nursing assistants, we need nurses, we need physician's assistants, and we need physicians. So the question is for the state, and this is a lot easier in my view to say in theory than to implement, is how are we providing that range of training? And some of it requires PhDs, and some of it requires a 3-month certificate training. How are we providing the right range of training for our young people as they're entering the workforce or getting retrained mid-career? And importantly, how are we making sure they're completing that training on time with a minimum amount of debt. And so the training is not only high quality, it's effective for the students that are there. So there's a mosaic. I think a diversified revenue stream, a diversified education system is always the most healthy ecosystem. And again, that's one of the challenges of figuring out within the MNSCU system and then within the larger context of the state how this mosaic fits together.
What can be perceived, a perceived conflict of interest for you in, as a trustee role, and how would you handle the situation?
Yeah, so I wrote about this a little bit in my application. As chair, or as, president and CEO of Greater Twin Cities United Way, we are, I think, very clear on the issues that we stand for and the issues that we're working with. I think the vast majority of the time that will allow me to be an informed trustee and really help move decisions forward. But I can't imagine there could be a conflict if... for example, we were both going for federal funding in the same area or something like that. And conflict of interest, again, are something I'm very familiar with given my governance roles with many hats, and I would simply step out of the conversation and step out of any vote that was required for that. And I'm confident that Chancellor Rosenstone and I would be able to anticipate any conflicts before they became urgent and find a way around them. I think that, again, transparency and even the perception of conflict can be very damaging both for the institution and the individuals involved, and I would do everything in my power to avoid that.
Thank you very much. As I review the questions, there was one that I think we skipped over and we're trying to ask people all the same questions. And that is the key issues on the horizon for higher ed in Minnesota. And in particular, what are the key issues on the horizon for MNSCU? Mm-hmm. You've covered some of this.
Sure, that was mine.
That was, yeah. Oh, it's this one. I'm sorry. Describe your past board experience and its relevance. You have so much board experience, but I see we wanted you to speak particularly how it's relevant to MNSCU's Board of Trustees.
Okay. I'd like to highlight one board that I was on almost a decade ago, and that is the Minnesota State Arts Board. And that was my perhaps my most analogous experience, not so much in terms of size, but in terms of that is a publicly appointed board where public dollars are being distributed to the nonprofit arts sector. And this was before the amendment was passed, so the dollars were slightly different at the time. And there was this very interesting dynamic around, as we all know as citizens, this concentration of large arts institutions in the Twin Cities, but this truly was the Minnesota State Arts Board, and there's a very strong regional system of arts centers, I'm forgetting the acronym, but arts centers and places where art is encouraged around the state that are also funded by the Minnesota State Arts Board. And that was, you know, and I thought I'd been on the Children's Theater Board and Pacer Board, and I'm a smart person, and I would get this, you know, here's another board that really matters. And it is different when one is a steward of taxholder dollars. And that need to be transparent, that need to be very accountable, while also making decisions, while also seeking high quality, is challenging. And there's a little more of an art to it, I think, when you're in this semi-public setting, like a MNSCU board or Minnesota State Arts Board, about gathering extensive public input around really making sure in a very careful way all parts of the state are heard and feel valued. And so that's an area I wanted to highlight. And I just want to close with one story from that board experience. There was an arts board employee who embezzled $10,000 of payroll funds. And those of you who are business people know payroll embezzlement is the easiest kind. It's the most common. It's not good, but it happens. And the staff on the arts board did exactly the right thing. The minute they heard about it, they reported it to the right authorities. The person was put on administrative leave, and it was handled exactly the right way. So the person was brought to justice. the harm was minimized, and we weren't sued as an arts, you know, because we followed the right rules. The arts board, my peers, were so upset about this, and they were so mad at the executive director for allowing this to happen. And I said to them, look, payroll fraud is terrible, and there was a misappropriation of $10,000 of taxpayer money. That's terrible. But this happens everywhere. You know, it's happened at General Mills. It's happened who knows where else in the state. The way you judge a leader is not by can they prevent something that's completely out of their control, but it's how they handle the problem when it comes to them. And in my opinion, this executive director handled the problem very well as soon as he was aware of it. And so I really felt good about that role I was able to play in this board, because it was trying to talk through this kind of hyperbole. We're in a public setting, our minutes are public, and really speak the truth and put this issue in perspective and value what was important, which was following the right process once a wrongdoing was discovered. So again, that's the piece I wanted to highlight, that experience. I think you can conjecture from my resume all the other board experience I've had that is relevant.
Thank you very much. And now we're going to throw it open for some questions. Carolyn?
There's one question that we didn't answer, and that was, what is your vision for maximizing access to educational opportunities for students?
Maximizing assets. Well,
access.
Access. Oh, that's really important. So this is right at the heart of some of the things that we're studying and trying to understand at United Way, and that Minsky is really working on. And it gets at this complicated point of, are the young people coming out of high school ready for Minsky education? And if they aren't, how do we get them ready and through whatever degree program they choose in the most cost-effective and efficient manner? So when you unpack this issue, in my point of view, you know, high school reform and really making sure junior and senior year the young people are getting ready for college, understand the value of college, and potentially taking college courses if it's appropriate, facilitates access and moving through the system. There's another piece, which is when some of our young people achieve, sometimes against very tough odds, a high school degree and come into the Minsky system and are still not ready, how do we surround them with academic and really social service support to get them ready? And in fact, one of my main entryways to interest in the Minsky system was a project United Way and St. Paul College and MCTC have piloted, where we have put almost, we don't call it this, but almost like a social worker in the academic tutoring office, because many of these people are using, you know, they're very stressed, they need help with food, they're supporting other family members, they need childcare. And what we've discovered through this pilot is having an extra set of helping hands at this young person's life as they're going through the system, as they're getting ready to enter the system, has had a significant impact on their ability to graduate and complete their certificate or a degree program. And so access is not just about money. It's about the resources that are surrounding these people as they're coming in, so they're not using Pell Grants, for example, to get remedial education and then have these huge loans before they're into their degree program. It also is about defending strongly the student loan and scholarship programs that exist at Minsky, because they are vital for the ability of young people to attend higher education.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
And what is your understanding of the role of Title IX in the Minsky system?
I do not have a good understanding of Title IX in the Minsky system. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Sonia?
Within your role as a trustee, much attention is given to, of course, the Minsky system, and as our council member Young stated, the University of Minnesota. But there are greater Minnesota institutions that need equal attention outside of the Twin Cities politics. How would you assure equitable attention to those institutions?
absolutely important. And I think when, I hope when I was talking about my role on the Minnesota State Arts Board, I talked about that statewide vision and that system, which I think in the Minsky case is having a system-wide vision. And I don't come with a particular allegiance or affinity to one institution or a couple institutions over another one. I would also comment in my role as President and CEO of Greater Twin Cities United Way. We're in the 9-county area. And so we are thinking continually about urban poverty, suburban poverty, rural poverty. We're in Shasanti and Chisago and Isanti County. I'm always merging them to some mega county. Anyway, very different environment, very different issues for United Way. And so I'm very familiar with, just within this 9-county area, some of those issues and would certainly bring a statewide commitment.
Thank you. Ron?
One of the responsibilities being a trustee is to represent all the people of the state of Minnesota in no particular interest community or constituency. But what I'd like to ask, if there were a subcommittee on the Board of Trustees, what committee would it be and what would its objective be?
A subcommittee
of the Board of Trustees. What committee would you sit on and what would the objective of that committee be?
Well, I'm not sure of the full extent of the committee structure at this point, but I could see playing a role in a variety of areas. I think one could certainly be on the Finance and Administration Committee. I could see working on system-wide strategic issues. I would think in an early day role, it would be premature for me to have oversight of academic and faculty issues because that's not my area of expertise. But I think one of the strengths I bring is an experience level and a commitment to representing all stakeholders and really understanding the needs of various stakeholders in kind of an additive way. Not, is this all about the students? Is this all about the employers? I mean, there are so many stakeholders. And I'm not sure what committee would sort of give voice to that. But I think really playing that role of representing all the needs of the stakeholders and finding a way that doesn't mean kind of dumbing down to the lowest common denominator, but really listening and then moving forward with bold and important plans.
Thank you.
Yes, Janet?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You touched on this a little lightly regarding the access to educational opportunities for mm-hmm. students. I'd like you to expand a little bit on what we could do to maximize the financial access of educational opportunities. As we know, our students are graduating or coming out of school with this enormous debt.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't look like the state is necessarily going to step in. What are your thoughts that can be done to buffer this just from a Minsky?
Well, sadly, this is really about arithmetic, and there are just a couple components that go into this. One is holding costs down, and I think that's something that Chancellor Rosenstone is committed to doing in the system, and the trustees have to really push on cost reduction across the system, which could then hold tuition flat or reduce it. So the whole expense side of the system, which part of it really is also, I think, looking at expanding remote education and internet education, and how can we bring, and I don't have an answer to this, but I think the question is, how can we cost effectively deliver courses to students where they are, and then bring them into the physical classroom at a point in when they need to have more of that student interaction and that direct interaction with a professor in a face-to-face way. And so really reducing costs in the system, which will take many, many different opportunities, internet education potentially being one of them. So you hold costs, fight to protect the loan systems that are in place and preserve those, seek as much public funding as possible, And really, those are there's no magic to this. It is tragedy. I have two nieces who have graduated and have significant debt, and watch them try to figure out how to pay this off when they both want to be early childhood educators is a painful thing.
You may not be aware, but the number of students that Minsky was educating now is more than 2002, and yet the budget is for the institutions is less than mm-hmm. it was in 2002. So when we're talking about efficiencies and cutting, we've also, Minsky has also done research on internet and finds that, unfortunately, it is as expensive, if not more expensive, delivery system.
Exactly.
So we're looking for, you know, you've got great ideas, but I'm just wondering if you could address specifically what you think, I mean, there's no one key, but specifically where we could look to have savings.
Well, I think that the campus system, the physical plan, mm-hmm. Has to be examined. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are 31, I think, institutions and 52, 53 mm-hmm. sites. And so I really do believe that has to be addressed. And I know that's a very politically thorny, as it should be, topic. One idea, and this isn't a new one, so perhaps the board has considered it, is to really set up a commission similar to the base closing kind of commissions that have been done at the federal level to study this and make a binding recommendation to the system, to the legislature, to the governor, for this sort of thing. And I am aware that internet education at this point, in any for-profit, non-profit, higher ed system has not proven to be cheaper. I think in the Minsky case, that needs to be advancing and growing as the costs of the physical plan are being diminished.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. I think we have time for one more question, if anybody has a question before we hear your closing statement. Okay. Hearing none. I'm going to show this to to everybody who comes in, this is the packet that Minsky trustees get, and there are the 9 meetings a year. When I said at a previous meeting, and these are double-sided, they're budget, there are a lot of things. One of the considerations is that this position right now is very time-consuming. People make great sacrifices to be trustees, and I'm just making people aware of how time-consuming it might be. So, thank you.
And I'd be happy to address that, Madam Chair. I know I put in my application that I would be willing to, and I can comfortably be able to provide 2 to 3 days per month of support for personal time for this Minsky trustee position. And I actually have spoken to Chancellor Rosenstone about his view for how he will use trustees and what he will ask trustees to be involved in. Mm-hmm. And he expressed to me a commitment to look at using the board in a slightly different way, in more of an oversight role that would potentially take less time. I would challenge him primarily and this committee to think about the reality of 40 hours a month of service and being able to bring on people who are kind of in the height of their leadership and their career opportunities and what is realistic. I feel, the board members at General Electric and some General Mills and U.S. Bank, some of our biggest and best companies in this country, don't spend 40 hours a month in their board leadership roles for systems that are equally, if not more complex and larger. So I think finding that right balance of what a trustee does is something that I hope Chancellor Rosenstone will address. Because I think the opportunity and the ability for current leaders to affect the well-being of the Minsky system is really essential to the well-being of the state, and that's why I'm interested. I think the opportunity to educate the broadest swath of young people and mid-career job-changing folks through the Minsky system is vital. And I came, I will tell you honestly, I've had this sort of elite education, and I came to Minnesota thinking, of course, the University of Minnesota is so vital. And then I really have put on this United Way hat the past 2.5 years. And I would say, I think really the Minsky system is more important. Don't tell President Kaler that. But I mean, in terms of its impact on the state and just sort of the bedrock of what happens, it's very, very important. I think understanding the students and the students' needs, how to give them access, how to get them on a completion track, not just in the system, but completing what they need to, and then providing the stepping stones for them to continue their education, to have better and better opportunities, is essential. I think governance from a system standpoint and from a statewide perspective is essential to the credibility of the board and the system. And I look forward to the opportunity to really help build this system with Chancellor Rosenstone and the many tens of thousands of people who are currently involved in leadership of the system, as well as the 300,000 students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've been negligent because I neglected to ask you if you have any questions of us concerning this.
Well, I would love to hear from the committee, what are the two or three biggest challenges you see the system facing? And if we have some solution for these access issues that seem viable and are actively under consideration.
Okay. Would anybody like to address that? Yes, Janet.
Thank you. I did work at the Community Technical College for a few years in Dakota County. And one of my concerns, and I don't know if this is an issue statewide or not, is potentially losing a piece of the vocational side of it. When we look at funding for the schoolings, and I do not know how the budget is composed, but your vocational component is a much more costly component than your normal community college. You need machinery, you need equipment, you need updating, you need state of the art. And if you can comment on that particular aspect and how we can assure that we continue with that piece right. of the Minsky system.
Well, I am highly confident that that's foundational to the Minsky system. There's a statewide project going on right now called Skills at Work, which is a survey of employers across the state and around what is needed for the Minsky system. And this is being led by Minsky in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce and United Way and a couple of other organizations. And clearly what we are hearing is that we need, as I said, leadership and job training in every job capacity. And that vocational training, that is where many of the openings are right now. And so I think that the data and the employer community will strongly reinforce vote tech training. And I've actually seen in the community colleges that United Way has worked for in the metro area great partnerships between business and the community college around vote tech training, bringing in second generation machinery that isn't totally current but that's quite close, having the technical college train workers on that equipment, and then bringing them in to learn, you know, to start a job on the most up-to-date equipment. So I can't imagine that would be challenged from an employer or from a system standpoint as a high priority.
Yes, Tim.
One of the things we touched on a little earlier is the need for partnerships between like University of Minnesota, Minsky system. But going beyond that, there's so many different areas. You just mentioned the one on the private industry, all the different areas around partnership. Can you talk a little bit about some of your experience with United Way and some of the stuff they've been doing to pull together partnerships from different organizations?
Partnerships, and we really call them collaborations, which I think is one step beyond a partnership. It's really doing joint work with joint goals and joint accountability are essential going forward. And without deep collaboration throughout the Minsky system, the Minsky system is not going to reach its potential. The issue with collaborations is they take a lot of time and a lot of trust and a lot of clarity, especially in the early stages, to set them up. My experience is all of that is worth it, because once these collaborations are deeply embedded, you can't figure out how you live without them. So things like collaborations at the local level with local high schools are essential for each Minsky location. Collaborations with local early childhood centers. So we're training early childhood educators and maybe retraining those who are already working in early childhood are essential. You know, this collaboration with business on the VOTEC training are essential. Collaboration with the legislature to have really a very clear, specific set of priorities that are talked about and their shared responsibility for is very clear. So this is really important work. And it has to really get into the lifeblood of Chancellor Rosenstone and the college presidents, and there have to be regular discussions about how this is happening at the local level, community level, and state level.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We've certainly enjoyed speaking with you. If you have any questions about the process, you can contact Sally Olson.
She's been a great help.
Yes, she has been a wonderful help. We thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.